All right. Hello. Good afternoon, Neighborhood Public Radio listeners. Good afternoon. So I'm Catherine, and I am interviewing Aaron Short from the Brooklyn Courier. So
hi.
So
crowded back here.
It is.
Somewhat.
It is, if you can hear in the background. We've got some live music coming up later, so stay tuned. But So Aaron, so I'm new to Brooklyn. So what would you?
Where in Brooklyn are you?
I'm kind of at the intersection of a couple of different neighborhoods, but I'm in between the Fort Hamilton Parkway F stop and the BQ at Church Avenue. What neighborhood is that?
Oh boy, it feels like Sunset Park, isn't it?
It's kind of. I don't think.
No, you're something else.
I think it's something else. It's very close to Ditmas Park, but not
Ditmas
quite.
Park. Okay.
Ditmas Park, but it's nice, just south of Prospect Park. So.
Yeah. No, that area is coming up certainly. A lot of people, instead of moving to Park Slope, they move to these other areas around the park, Prospect Heights or Flatbush or just areas south of the park, not quite in Midwood, but it's interesting out there.
It is. It is interesting. It's really interesting. It's lots of, you know, just going a couple of blocks in either direction gets you into what seems like a totally different neighborhood. So.
Good food. You tried the food out there.
I'm working on the food. I'm slowly exploring the food. I have my eye on a taqueria, but I am from California, so my standards are quite high.
I see. Well, the best tacos, I maintain the best tacos in the city are in Bushwick, which is the area I cover, northeast Brooklyn, somewhat far from where you are. Sort of hard to get anywhere in Brooklyn unless you have a car, just the way the bus system works. Even on the bus system, it's sort of a while to get downtown to Park Slope to anywhere else.
Tell me about Bushwick.
Well, Bushwick is it's a majority Spanish-speaking neighborhood, a lot of immigrants from Mexico, the Dominican Republic, and Puerto Rico, as well as smaller pockets from Ecuador. So, well, lively population from Ecuador and Venezuela, Colombia, Guyana, as well as a substantial African-American population in the southern part of the neighborhood, and then artists that have been moving, of all genders, races, ethnicities, have been moving in, at least into the western part, and into East Williamsburg, sort of displaced from Williamsburg, from the Lower East Side. So they keep pushing into these loft spaces, and that isn't necessarily removing people, but it's the effects of these new buildings getting renovated, has on zoning that sort of causes landlords to increase the price of their existing six family frame buildings, and then that ends up pushing some of these poorer people out into East New York and Canarsie.
Or
Ridgewood.
Is there some tension in Bushwick between these kind of different immigrant groups, shall we say, between the artists being pushed out of artists and kind of working people being pushed out of Williamsburg, and then the communities that are there, or these growing immigrant communities?
I don't think there's as much tension between the artists and the other groups. I think the groups that have been there a longer time, like the Dominican population, some of them have been there for 50 years. And obviously there's a number of African American, at least community leaders, that have been there 30, 40 years in this community, and they always seem surprised that artists are interested in meeting with them. There's a number of older sort of nonprofits that have been there for a long time, like the Ridgewood Bushwick Senior Citizens Council. They do a lot of senior housing and youth education groups. And let's see, there's also something called Make the Road New York, which is a growing activist group that wouldn't be out of place in the Bay Area, certainly. And they're a member-based organization. They've been around for maybe 10 years. I think maybe a little bit longer than that. I forget the exact time. I think they were founded in 95, mid-90s. And they're interesting. They're mostly Spanish-speaking, and they deal with a lot of immigrant issues. They were in city council all week this week on budget. negotiations. It's amazing to see all these immigrants coming in, and Make the Road has such a big presence, and they're such an important part of Brooklyn. They've been growing so much.
That's great.
Interrupt for just a second.
Sure.
I'd just like to give a shout out to Michael Allison in Seattle. What's up?
All right. Returning now to our Bushwick coverage.
Right.
So how is Bushwick changing? What are some of the signs of Bushwick changing?
I think the biggest thing is the reduction in crime, coupled with the increase in real estate prices. And you've seen just large scale changes for crime. I mean, you know, down. It's either 300 or 500% for like certain things like larcenies and robberies over a 10-year period. Really, the whole neighborhood has changed tremendously. I've been told by people who lived there maybe 20 years ago, they were describing walking from Jefferson Street to Maria Hernandez Park, which used to be Bushwick Park. The park was renamed because this woman, Maria Hernandez, a local activist, was actually shot and killed right steps from the park. I think she was fighting gang activity in the neighborhood, and one of the fellows who was there, who started a football league for a lot of other people who live on the block, who still live in the neighborhood, older guys, you know, 20s, 30s, and he was describing how people would stand on the rooftops with machine guns and, you know, semi-automatic weapons, other weapons and such, defending their turf. Against these sort of older drug dealers, and that's where you would go for drugs. You go to Jefferson Street and walk down the park, and a lot of murders.
Wow.
The cop, you could tell things were changing. They could tell the cops were having more of a presence, because every time there was a vacant lot, they would put a playground around this, like a small playground in there. And they were also starting to chop down, this is Giuliani administration, the 90s, was chopping down trees to sort of, that wouldn't obscure the view of the rooftops. So I think there was a lot more police enforcement in the 90s, you know, early, mid-90s. And that, I think, cleaned up a lot of the parks and the areas around them.
Right.
Or at least the drug activity sort of receded inside the buildings. You don't see it as much outside, or you see it shifting and concentrating further into East New York or Brownsville.
Wow. What is there still the drug activity in Bushwick? Is it just undercover, or has it actually moved further east?
According to the people I talk with, it is. I mean, there's still drug activity there. I mean, certainly you still have weed, marijuana being sold, and being used inside, say, abandoned buildings, squatting buildings. I know we've had issues in the past couple of months where fires have started because of squatters engaging drug activity inside abandoned buildings. I know there's one actually right on the park where that seemed to be the cause, although fire department hasn't confirmed it yet. And police have been complaining about that as being a result of the foreclosure crisis, leading to a lot of these abandoned buildings sort of turning over and the owners skipping town, and people sort of taking advantage of going in boarded up buildings for almost safe houses. So there is drug activity. It's not quite in the open. I certainly don't see it walking around there almost every day. That doesn't say it isn't there, it isn't at night, it isn't shifted further east into, you know, other areas closer to Broadway Junction. But there's still pockets of violence, certainly, and crime as well.
What about gang activity in Bushwick? You were showing me some photographs.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I think the gang activity is complicated, and there are a lot of smaller groups. What we're seeing now, and at least I've been to a couple of different precinct meetings, one in Williamsburg, which is the 90th, and one in a number of them in Bushwick, the 83rd, and they're seeing that it's mostly older kids, 17 and 18, that are recruiting these middle schoolers, 12 to 14, who haven't really formed sort of strong, you know, friendship bonds, strong relationships with their peers, and so they're targeting these middle schoolers by getting them involved in some of the gang activity after school, because there aren't enough I mean, put it together, there aren't enough after school programs in the neighborhood to keep people occupied. So it isn't quite. It depends who you talk to, and I'm still sort of investigating and trying to figure out, well, how much of this is middle schoolers who are just moving in multiple roving groups that are sort of fighting with each other and shooting each other, which is obviously a big problem, something to be taken serious, or is this a bigger conspiracy with a lot of people involved? And I don't get the sense that it is. I think it's these smaller groups, but they could be strengthening. I don't quite know who. I don't know who they're talking with yet. And that's something I'm hoping to at least sort of explore more, talking more with the DA's office in Brooklyn that prosecutes these cases. I know they're trying to fight it, certainly by getting parents in the neighborhoods to look for gang signs on their own children, on their children's friends, and then in stores, in retail stores that sell clothing that could be used as gang paraphernalia. And that's a story I'm working on this week.
I think that's really that's really important, because it is hard for hard for an outsider, for adults even to tell the difference between, especially in these kind of borderline gangs or groups. Is this
right.
A bunch of teenagers hanging out, or is
calling
this
themselves
actually
the Bloods, without actually being the Bloods?
Exactly. Is this something inspired by by video games, or is it something a little more serious?
Well, it's like Al Qaeda, right? I mean, you have groups anyone can call themselves Al Qaeda in Iraq, but they don't. You have to have the intelligence running so that who's who's real and who is just a group that's claiming they're that just to get attention.
Right.
So I don't know.
So
that's hard to say, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like a difficult line to negotiate, because there is a certain amount of teenagers do need to have some freedom, and there are somewhat obnoxious sometimes, and that's there's a certain amount of that that's developmental, that's their socializing, and their I've taught high school a lot, so I know about some of these things that are some of the hanging out in groups, and doesn't seem like they're doing anything, but it's actually a very important process for them.
I think some of it's branding. It's trying to make sure that, at least the way that this is showing up in schools, because I've heard this in middle schools, that they see kids passing around certain color bandanas, certain color beads, wearing the bandanas in a certain way. Tattoos are harder to tell. I think that's where parents need to come in. If they don't know, strip your kid, right?
Right, right. The school cannot do that.
The school can't do that. But, if you're a mom, you sure can do that.
Right.
You brought him into this world. You can take him out.
It's not the first time.
So I think there are different things that schools can do. And one school that I had talked with had seen, beads and red bandanas going around. And it wasn't, there wasn't anything organized within the school. At least they didn't think so. So I don't think it's in this school. But once they saw it, they basically, banned and confiscated. And that's, the school really has to know what these signs are and be aware of what's being sold in local stores. And then the Yankees, too. Teams like the New York Yankees, New Era, and other retailers, whether it's national chains, if they're making things, if they're making red Yankees hats, the Yankees aren't red.
Right.
they're navy and white. So I understand profit margins, et cetera, but they shouldn't be making red hats that people are using, to be with the Bloods, I guess.
Right.
So that was an issue that's come up before. This isn't the first time it's been talked about. But I always find that interesting.
With working, so there is some effort to work with local retailers and kind of.
Well, I think they're being called out right now. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm still seeing the red hats sold in stores, so that hasn't changed. Or at least New Era needs to be called out a little bit more. I mean, the Yankees are aware of it. I don't know if New Era is. New Era is one of the contractors that make Major League Baseball hats.
Oh, okay.
I think Russell, the uniforms, Majestic, had the contract most recently. I don't know. Sometimes it's different each team.
you know,
right.
I forget who's the official Yankees supplier. But
right. And I'm sure there's some unofficial.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, I saw a Latin King hat that was sold. It looked like the New York Yankees logo, but it wasn't knitted in completely. Mm. It's like there was an outline. And it was in black and gold, and there was a crown above, and there were sequins on it. Like, that's not a Yankees hat.
Right.
No one from the Yankees is going to be wearing that hat. That's something else.
So what are some of the things that communities, that schools, that parents could try to do that are proactive, especially with this, especially targeted at this, the middle school? You know, if the gangs are targeting the proto gangs are targeting these middle school kids. What are some of the things that could be done to divert them from?
Well, if the parent doesn't know what the signs are, that's certainly the first step. So it's getting the local district attorney in the county. I've seen, you know, the Brooklyn presentation. I went there on Saturday for a presentation. That was one of those, you know, no photographs, no notebook. You know, I just sit there and watch that, because people are, you know, sensitive about this. And they had a long slideshow about you know, what the signs are, what the tattoos are for each gang in each neighborhood, photographed graffiti. They have a phone number where you can call and report. You know, you can send you can report graffiti. You can also, they have an email address where you can send photographs of graffiti in your neighborhood that looks like, you know, gang activity. And it's different than street art. I mean, Bushwick is an area where a lot of people do street art. It's also an area where there's a lot of gang activity, also relative to the neighborhood, and they do graffiti. So, and sometimes they mix. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you have to be sort of careful as to telling what the difference is between street art and gang signs. So I think talking with your local district attorney's office, seeing if you can get a presentation in your school after school at night. I assume they would be open to doing that. They have a very aggressive community relations organization in Brooklyn. I'm not sure about the other counties. I think something would be the same. I know there is, you know, there's gang activity, of course, in Manhattan and Queens, and in the suburbs too. We're seeing a lot of that. So talking with the people who know, and that's law enforcement in the district attorney's office. And they do these kinds of presentations. So that's important. Documenting, sending this stuff out, and, you know, searching your kids sometimes, right? And,
right. Yeah.
And you know, paying attention to who your kids are friendly with, who their friends are as well.
Yeah.
It's important.
It's such a vulnerable age. I mean, in 12 to 14, that middle school age, it's such a, you know, I don't think anybody is like, I had a great time in middle school.
Right, no one.
I felt very confident about myself.
Maybe yeah.
Nobody ever says that. So, I mean,
how old is Miley Cyrus right now? Is she like, I think she's having a good time. Yeah.
I mean, it's such an interesting age because, you know, they are just really on the kind of cusp of young adulthood, and they can,
right.
It's the time when kids can really drop out and really get themselves into a lot of trouble. Once they're 14, you can, you know, you're getting into starting to be charged as an adult, actually, into that possibility at least. But at the same time, like, they are young and they are kids, and there's a way there's this opportunity for them to turn their lives around,
right, sure.
at that age as well. So, so it seems like an important thing for not only the schools and the parents, but for the community as a whole. Like, even people who don't have kids, you know, but you live in the neighborhood. Like, it's important to support these programs that are gonna help, like, you know, individual kids, but also the community at large.
Right. Arts programs are always good for this.
Arts programs. Yay.
Right. Good
stuff. So we're getting I'm going to have to kind of wrap things up a bit. But anything else you want to tell us?
It was a big art weekend in New York. We had the Armory Show in Chelsea. And then a lot of people migrated over the river to galleries in Williamsburg for open galleries there, which happens every so often as well. So there are a lot of packs, roving packs of art enthusiasts running from gallery to gallery. And a couple of other shows that are really interesting. I interviewed someone this weekend named Judith Supine, who does sort of these outsider collage pastiche art pieces, where he'll make the collage from different magazine faces, and it'll look like this sort of odd, multicolor, psychedelic Hunter S. Thompson dream, pretty much. Like if Hunter S. Thompson kidnapped, you know, someone and then wrote a ransom note, but without letters, just in faces. And what he does is, well, he's doing this show in English Kills Gallery, which is 114 Forest Street. It's opening on April 12th. It's huge. The space is huge. I went in there. It's all black. They've blackened the plywood. They put plywood up and painted it black. So basically, he's just going to mess up the gallery with all these figures.
Wow.
And they're very long. One of the sculptures is, well, paintings. Basically, wheat pastes it onto plywood.
Oh, interesting.
I think it's 12 by 40 is one of them. So there's going to be some long, big stuff in there. And after he's done, he's going to hang them up all over Manhattan and Brooklyn.
Oh, wow.
So if you see it and you're in the city in June, you can just grab it and take it home with you and have some art. And hopefully he won't get arrested doing this.
Right.
So, yeah, which he has in the past. He's hoping not to be arrested this time, but I don't think he really cares.
What would they call that? What's the technical term for hanging up a large piece of art without permission?
Yeah, it's street art. Mm-hmm. It's a type of street art. I know Ron English was doing this with banners and billboards, where he'd post up like different shaped camel cigarette posters back in the 90s. And still does some of that, but this person is just putting up these figures, sort of weird hulking plywood figures all over the city. And one he hung on the Manhattan Bridge, he said it weighed 50 pounds, and he just put it on the back of his bike and biked up, and there was a cop right there, and they didn't even do anything, I think, you know. Probably a little slow to notice. And you could see it, like, if you're on one of these tourist boats in the East River and you see this green face with a body hanging from the middle of a bridge.
That's great.
So stuff like that is coming our way soon.
That's good, yeah.
So that's a type of street art, for sure. graffiti artists.
Oh, sorry.
Oh. And, yeah, he's in Bushwick. And there are a lot of other folks that are like that in Bushwick. Not really eager to do stuff in Chelsea. I think there's different cultural things at work here.
Definitely. Well, certainly it seems like Bushwick has a different relationship with, there's a more organic relationship with street art in Bushwick.
Yeah, and it keeps pushing outwards. You know, it's a place where artists can still afford to live. Mm-hmm. Williamsburg, they really can't anymore. The prices have gone really high. And when they're not high, you know, people get evicted for having an illegal matzah factory in the basement because of the threat of the grain silo exploding.
Oh, right. What was
right.
the,
so that
what
was
the
fun.
Name of that? There was an artist community. Yeah.
That was 457 Kent in the Hasidic neighborhood. It's one of the exploding matzah factory. Happy Pesach for those listening. It's coming up in a couple of weeks as well. I know. Wow. I don't know where I'm going to get my hookup now. I'm going to have to go to Streit's. They moved. It's bad news. They were in the Lower East Side, and now they're somewhere else in Brooklyn. So either that or I'll have to find another illegal matzah factory under there. They're a couple.
The illegal matzah factories. That sounds like you could do a whole story on that, like illegal matzah factories. Like, where... What's the least legal?
Yeah, oh no, Streit's is legal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Manischewitz, they're in Newark. They're big factories in Newark. So there's a lot around here. I like the shawarma stuff. Those are the big circles where the Hasidic guys, will pat them really thin, bake them in pizza ovens, you know, almost like brick ovens. Mm. And you go in, it's like $18 a pound. It's not cheap.
Wow.
But it tastes horrible.
Right. Like right. I mean, it's matzah.
It's basically, yeah, it's cardboard. It's really bad. But they're fun to throw, and they're good to hide. Mm-hmm. And it's good to bring, you know, like a box of this stuff back home to the family, which I'm going to be doing.
Sounds like you maybe could do some real Bushwick street art, and instead of hanging up massive plywood paintings, you could do some paintings on matzah.
It'll last. They're still selling matzah from last year. It's only $5 a pound, but as you don't eat it.
Right.
I would not eat 1-year-old matzah.
That's construction material.
These aren't vintages. They're just right. You're better off eating the box, the matzah.
The year-old box, not a problem. The year-old matzah, not so good.
Yeah, but some people need it for the, there's a certain prayer that they do, that the Orthodox Hasidic groups do. You need a couple of different matzahs, but you don't have to eat it, so that's why people buy it.
Oh, I see. Wow.
So there's a cultural thing.
There is this,
as well.
So. Yeah. Huh. We could do a whole other show. I think
we can talk religion another weekend.
Yeah,
some interesting Easter stuff. Went to a bunch of services. They didn't let me carry the cross in procession for Good Friday, but maybe next year.
Yeah. No, religion in Brooklyn. How many religions are there in Brooklyn? It's countless. I think.
I've met Muslims, Hindus. Well, you know, a number of different denominations of Christianity, maybe 4 types of Judaism, maybe 5. Yeah, it's a lot.
It's amazing. It's amazing. All right. Thank you so much, Aaron.
All right, great.
We'll come back and see us.
Yeah, we'll talk religion another time.
Yes. Come back and tell us about religion and carbohydrates.
I'll have more on gangs too. I think we're going to start investigating, and at least I'm hoping to start investigating more about gang activity. Because I've health insurance now, so why not? I can do that kind of story, and not worry about getting hospital treatment if I need it. So.
All right.